You're listening to... Offering in-depth analysis on all things Boston Celtics with your hosts, Jim and Mike Quigley.
All right, it's 3-1, Mike. The Celtics coming off two really good defensive basketball games, not according to Stan Van Gundy, but to my mind, to my eyes, that's what I saw yesterday and then again on Saturday. But they do not come away unharmed as Kristaps Porzingis goes down late in the first half with what looks like a calf injury. Initial report says it's not an Achilles, it's a calf strain, and they'll be imaging today, which is Tuesday morning while we're recording this, to give further details about the extent of the injury. So that kind of remains the unknown. I think it's safe to say the Celtics will be out without him for at minimum the remainder of this series. What's beyond that, I guess, is just a real unknown right now. Certainly being a big guy has some concerns.
Well, I was just listening to Scales on his radio show, and Scales said on the team trip back last night that he was in a walking boot up to his knee. He didn't look great, and that Scales was saying on the radio show that he doesn't think he'll be back until the Eastern Conference Finals or the NBA Finals. So I don't know if that's inside knowledge, but he said the Celtics seemed optimistic that he'd be back, but it was going to be a while.
Yeah, I mean, even if it's, a calf strain, you could still be a couple weeks, which would have you lose the conference semis. I don't think that would be shocking at this point. I think if we get him back, considering how it looked on the floor, that would be pretty good, because when it initially happened, I wondered if it was the Achilles, the way it looked. But we'll see. We'll see when... what the test says, and I don't think it's shocking that he's in a walking boot, whether it's regardless of the strain, especially a guy that size after an injury. I think you would expect that unless it was just something super minor, right? So, but Mike, go where you want to start with this. There's a lot happening with this game. There's the extracurricular from the Heat. There's the way the Celtics performed during adversity. There's their defense. There's their offense. And there's their fourth quarter play. So I think there's a lot to take away, and I'll let you go with it.
I'd love to stop by just saying it's nice to see the two biggest ring chases in NBA history. One got swept, and the other got a gentleman sweep last night. Mm. Kevin Durant on his second field super team in a row. So that's really refreshing. Other than that,
Jamal Murray's a killer.
He sure is. That three he hit to go up was huge off the offensive rebound. But I will say, as far as the Celtics go, obviously they've been locked in more defensively since that game two performance. I still think offensively they're a little up and down. They had, in the first half last night, they had a 3-minute they went 3 minutes without scoring a bucket. And then the fourth quarter last night, that 14-5 run where they were just kind of, I think, walking the ball up to try to run the clock down and get out of Miami, which can be frustrating to watch because, when they play with pace, they're a better team. So those little things still concern me. But I want to talk about the dirty play from Bam. It was unnecessary. Pushing Tatum where he's shooting the ball after the play has been blown dead. Guys shoot the ball all the time in situations. I don't understand what Bam was trying to accomplish there. And then his foot going under Tatum, it looks dirty. It looks like a dirty play. And if it was accidental, it's still unnecessary because he shouldn't have been touching Tatum after the whistle. And I have a lot of issue with Bam. I think he gets away with a lot. The foul called on Tatum last night, which was bizarre because Bam was ripping at his arm, which could rip a guy's arm, like their shoulder, out of place. I think there's a lot of that with him. I know I said on the last pod, can somebody do something about this guy? Can somebody run through his chest? Tatum did that in the first half. I know Scales was like, oh, you can't pick up that early foul. I know Tatum acted like he didn't do it on purpose, but I thought it was sending a message, and I thought it was important. Because his screens are dangerous, too. And he said a couple last night. that looked like they could hurt somebody. I'm really sick of this guy. I don't like the way he plays. I don't know why this Heat culture thing is the way it is. Like, Eric Spoelstra yelling at the refs after that play. Like, it's Derek White's fault for flopping that Bam did that. What is this, like, Heat culture bullshit? Like, there's a difference between playing tough and being dirty. And I think the Heat walked that line quite a bit.
The foul that I called, Patty Mills clearly pushed him from the back, was White was going to set a screen, too. So it wasn't, if White embellished it, it's fine. But, I mean, it was a two-handed push in front of the ref. I mean, it couldn't be more clear of a foul. Bam's a physical player, and I think he probably toes the line. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think the extracurricular stuff after the play exists. And I think twice now, kind of stuff happening to Tatum, you know, it's tough to really look at it as a coincidence, especially late in games. There's different types of closeouts. You know, usually after the whistle, closeouts are really soft, just kind of hands up, right, on a guy shooting it, and it's, you know, two guys kind of going half speed. Bam kind of closed out hard on that, and you're absolutely right, it was unnecessary, and he slipped his foot under Tatum's after the whistle, when you're taught not to do that ever now in the NBA. So, you know, you could say that was just a mistake by Bam, but it wasn't a natural closeout in the way that it's taught now. You know, it was a, it's deemed a flagrant in live action, never mind a dead ball action. What I have liked is how the Celtics have responded. I thought the Celtics, after that point, you know, that was in the midst of that 14-5 run for 4 minutes to cut the lead down to 13, I think. The Celtics at that point stretched the lead back out to 20. Now, I know the Heat got it down to 14, but there were two buckets within the last minute that really, you know, don't matter. Buckets. Yeah, it was really a 20-point game, and the Celtics, you know, stretched that lead back out. I thought they had really good offensive sets. I thought they brought intensity on defense, and I thought they closed it well after that run by the Heat and after that play. And I do like, at times, since game two, how they've responded to, you know, what you would kind of circle as tough situations. And I circle that one there, and I really like how they responded to close the game from there on out. I like how Tatum responded. He got up and made the two free throws. You know, there was no real bitching or anything that took place from him. Initially, he was upset. After the timeout, he just walked to the line, made the free throws, moved on to the next play. The other moment that I kind of circled, I remember, Mike, during game two, I said, let's circle this moment. It was the six-minute mark in the third quarter. The Heat were making a mini run. Mazzulla calls a timeout. And the Celtics have consistently really good offensive sets to close the quarter and just basically end the ball game. And, you know, their offense at times this series, and especially since game one, I think has been kind of uneven, is a charitable way to say it. It hasn't been their best showing. I think a part of that is Miami's a really good defensive team. They put in a lot of effort. They're well coached. They give you different looks, and I think they can be frustrating. But what the Celtics haven't done, for the most part, is they really haven't turned the ball over. They haven't given Miami runouts on the defensive steals or long rebounds for easy baskets. And because of that, Miami's never really been able to build momentum. So we talk about how important, you know, limiting those live ball turnovers against a team like the Heat is, and they've done that. This is how the series should look if the Celtics come to play and come to fight. It should, you know, they should be non-competitive games. And I think with the exception of game two, and with the exception of maybe a couple quarters in games one and four, they've really been non-competitive games. And we'll see now. We'll see how they close it out. And it's interesting. It's going to be a lot different. You know, you don't have Porzingis, who I think has been pretty effective on Bam. It seems like he figured out after, like, game three on how to defend him, which is not to body him and to play off him and close late. He can do that because of his size. Al obviously cannot do that because he just doesn't have the height and length that Porzingis has. So how are they going to adapt to that? How are they going to match Miami's physicality? They're going to lose some offense with switches. It's tough to play one and four out without, right? It's not the same effective offense. It kind of goes back to what they were doing last year. That said, they should still close this out. Even if the game's a little bit closer, they should still at home just close this out and end this series. And no excuses. This needs to end Wednesday. And that means they're going to have to come up with another really good showing on defense, close out strong on shooters, don't turn the ball over, and continue to rebound like they've defensively rebounded throughout this whole series. They do those things. Bam could score 30. He could score 35, and they should still win. If they let Miami hang around, last thing you want to do is, without Porzingis now, give them a little bit of life going back to Miami for Game 6. So they have to, in my opinion, close this out on Wednesday night.
Yeah, they don't want to do what they did last year against Atlanta and come home and lose Game 5. No. And last year in Atlanta, in Game 5, we saw that fourth quarter walking the ball up with the lead and then slowly giving it away, right? So definitely just touch on Derek White was incredible last night.
I'm glad you went there.
We look back to that trade with San Antonio. I don't think we envisioned this guy scoring 38 points on the road in the playoff game. Really, he was the reason he was the offense last night. The offense ran through him. The fourth quarter, things were really not good. The Celtics weren't playing with pace. Just really not playing with any intensity at all. And it was Derek White who really started taking over in the fourth quarter with some big hoops, which, you know, got the Celtics back on track. He had two dunks last night in the third quarter, right? Just 8 for 15 from three, just an incredible game. And the other thing I want to touch on, just game three and game four, I think game three more offense, but game four the same level intensity. That Peyton Pritchard's bringing when he comes into the game defensively can't go unnoticed because the Celtics.
Holiday, too. Oh my God. Holiday's defense has been unreal.
Yeah. I'm talking about what picked the bench and what they're providing. And Luke Kornet in the third quarter last night. Bam didn't score when Luke Kornet was in the game in the third quarter last night. Bam was getting his baskets against Al Horford, and there was another play where Luke sprinted down the floor back on offense, and it led to a wide open layup for, I think it might have, couldn't have been Pritchard. I don't think Pritchard scored last night. No, I think whoever it was.
Yeah, I think it was
probably White. Yeah. And so I see Kornet playing a bigger role now with Porzingis out. And I think that I'm interested to see how much Mazzulla trusts his bench, because Al can't play 35 minutes a night. We saw this in the playoffs last year. They have to reserve those minutes, and Mazzulla is going to have to trust his bench here with Porzingis hurt. And I think he should. I think Kornet has shown the ability to play.
And I think Miami is a good matchup for Kornet. I think he just matches up pretty well against them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's a outside of the New York Knicks and Pacers left in the playoffs. I don't think next round, I think Kornet should play. I don't see the bigs in Cleveland or Orlando. I mean, they're pretty good, but I don't think they're guys that Kornet can't play against. I think he can match up with those guys. Kornet's a rim runner, right? He protects the rim on the defensive end. I think he does a good job at what he is capable of. He's not a good rebounder.
I think he's
Al Horford's not a great rebounder either.
I think Kornet is the best defensive rebounder on the team. I disagree with that. I think he is a good rebounder. I think he's a better defensive rebounder than Porzingis. His problem is, you know, you just can't put him in any space, or he's going to be, you know, they're going to be able to cook him pretty well in defense with guards. And he struggles getting out on shooters, but I think they're going to need him for rebounding purposes, big time. They're going to need him for rebounding purposes. I don't think there's anyone on that bench that can give it to him. You know, maybe with maybe Cater, I guess, but Cornett has been a really good defensive rebounder for this team all season long. And I think that's going to be key going forward. Mike, you know, so we, how do you think, and you touched on it already, but we're going to be without Porzingis, certainly for the rest of this series. Looking forward to the next round and potentially an Eastern Conference Finals. How concerned are you with them getting through this, and what's your biggest concern, and how do you think they kind of remedy it?
I'm concerned. I don't think they can win an NBA Finals without him. The West just has so much talent. You know, if they end up playing Minnesota, you have to deal with those three bigs between Naz Reid and Gobert. And then, you know, obviously, Denver having the best player in the world. There's just so much there where having a talent like Porzingis gives you a real shot, and it allows Al to come off the bench and not play big minutes, which Al was so ineffective last year in this playoff run. That's what's concerning to me, is that these minutes are going to be taxing on Horford, and he could end up being a big zero for these Celtics moving forward, because he's just not going to have, his body's just not going to be able to take it. And so I think for Mazzulla, he's got to be really creative and adjusting his rotations. And if Cornett doesn't have it, trying Tillman, he just has to. Al can't play Al's too valuable in what he brings off the bench with his shooting and passing, and his ability to defend, for them to lose him in the long term, as well as Porzingis. So, well, hopefully they get Porzingis back by the Eastern Conference Finals, but we shall see. I think they can make the finals without Porzingis, but I don't think they can win it.
Yeah, I think you hit on it. The Al minutes are going to be huge. You don't want to see him get worn down. And can Tillman and Cornett kind of give you enough? Give you enough to get through the next round? And you think they should be able to. If you play at Cleveland, you like your matchup on the wings quite a bit, right, I think? But Cleveland, you know, certainly has some really good bigs. With Jared Allen and Evan Mobley. And they're good. Mobley, you know, is a guy that can play with facing the basket, back to the basket. They're both good rebounders. They're both good on the defensive end. And one of the things you're going to lose, especially offensively, when Horford comes out of the game, is they're not going to have to respect your other bigs as shooters, whether that's Tillman or Cornett. So you're not going to be able to stretch that floor out for your guards and your wings to be able to penetrate and kind of get the offense going that way. You're going to have one big just kind of sitting there waiting for you, which makes things a lot more difficult, as you know. So it's definitely going to be different. But it's not like they haven't had to play with Al as their main big in the playoffs before either, right? I mean, this has happened. They've gotten through rounds. They've come up short, but they've gotten through rounds. To me, I think they get through the next round. I think instead of it being like a gentleman sweep with Porzingis, I think it would have been a 4 or 5-game series against Orlando or Cleveland. I think you're probably looking at a 6-7-game series, more than likely. I still think the Celtics get through. I got a high level of confidence that they'll get through. It's the Eastern Conference Finals. You play the Knicks. They are relentless on the offensive glass. Absolutely relentless. And the Celtics' lack of size there, especially when it's just Al on the floor, really feels problematic against a team like that. And it feels like one of those series where we'd feel like the Celtics were getting defensive stop after defensive stop, only to see it get blown up because the Knicks just continued getting extra possessions. And that wears a team out. That just wears a team out. So that's a series.
I still feel the same way about the Knicks long term. I just don't think they can score with the Celtics.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe not. But I think once again, I would look at that as a, you know, 75% chance with Porzingis you get through, 75-80% chance you beat the Knicks. I think that goes down to somewhere 60-65% chance. So I just think it's a considerable drop off, a considerable one. And I'd like to see him back by then, but obviously we don't have the magic powers of healing. So, you know, that's not up to us.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with that, Jim. I don't think the Knicks have the scoring to keep up with the Celtics. I think the Celtics still take that series even without Porzingis. I know the Knicks are playing, you know, Philly great now, but at the same time, Embiid is just not the same player in the fourth quarter of these games at all. He has zero rebounds in the last three games in the fourth quarter against New York. He's not defending at all in those fourth quarters, and he's also not scoring the ball in those fourth quarters. So I think the Knicks story is great. I think Jalen Brunson's incredible, but can they really score with Tatum, Brown, and Derek White? I don't think they can. I don't think they can keep up. So I still feel confident that the Celtics can get through the East even without Porzingis, but I give them like a 0% shot in the NBA Finals without him. That's where I'm at.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with you, especially if it's Denver. Especially if it's Denver, I just...
And I'll say one last thing. I think
to beat them almost.
I give the Pacers a chance against the Knicks. I do.
I don't. Yeah. I don't see that happening. You do? Why?
I think the Pacers score the ball, especially at home. They shoot the three way more effective than the Knicks do, especially at home. And I think Pascal Siakam has played really well. I give them a shot. You know, I think that's a 6 or 7 game series easily.
Pacers are going to get their welcome to the playoffs moment against the Knicks. I think the intensity, it was a nice introduction to the playoffs against the Pacers. I don't think they've had the intensity of a real playoff series yet. With the way the Bucks, they're just so slow. And without Giannis and Dame, they can't keep up the scoring at all. I think the Knicks, the speed, the physicality, the intensity, I'm not sure this Pacers team is quite ready for that yet. And I think they're going to kind of really have their welcome to the playoffs in round two. You could be right, but that's just what I think is going to happen to them. As I kind of feel that way, if the Magic get by Cleveland, it's going to be similar with the Celtics for them. So, all right. Not all good news with the Celtics, but 3-1. Do they finish this Wednesday, Mike?
Yeah. It's not going to be close, and it shouldn't be.
I think they do, too. I think it's going to be a little closer than people want it to be. The Heat, I think one thing we know is they're not going to quit. Even if they get down big, they're not one of these 8 seeds that are just going to get ready for Cancun. That's not really how they're wired. And I would just get out of this healthy and don't respond to any of their bullshit. The last thing we need is a player suspended for round 2 or missing a game in round 2. Just beat them with toughness. Get out of there. Don't get involved in the extracurricular stuff. Don't be baited by Spoelstra or Bam or Caleb Martin or whomever. And thank God Kyle Lowry isn't on this team this year.
Listen, you can't lose. We'll go up. You can't lose another home game in this playoff series. You cannot lose another home game to this team. There is no excuses. Just come on, get out. Just play the right way. If you play the right way, you're going to win by 20.
Yep. And get out healthy. Get out healthy. All right. Want to do another pod? We'll do another pod later this week once the series wraps, and we can look forward to whomever they might play in round 2. And we'll get some Porzingis news, hopefully.
All right.
All right. Be good, everyone.